This is Payments Innovation. We take you deep into the DNA of digital finance with some of the most respected voices in the industry. Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Payments Innovation Podcast. In today's digital age, the world has never been more connected. The internet has brought us together and e-commerce has revolutionized how we buy and sell goods and services. This truly is the global digital economy, where buyers and sellers can now be in almost any corner of the planet. In fact, one recent industry report suggests that cross-border e-commerce growth will outstrip domestic growth by more than 2x over the next 5 years, making up over a third of all e-commerce spend globally by 2028. We've seen significant advancements in domestic digital payments, making transactions instantaneous and seamless. But cross-border payments can still remain a complex, slow, sometimes costly process, which in turn can hinder that growth of the global digital economy. So with technology evolving rapidly and consumer behaviors shifting quickly around us, are cross-border e-commerce services keeping up? I'm your host, Piers Murray, and I couldn't have a better expert joining me to talk through this today than my guest, Will Artingstall, Head E-commerce Solutions at Citi. Will, welcome. Thank you for joining me today. And for those of our listeners who don't know you, could you give us a bit of information about your background and what you're up to in, I think, your new role at Citi?
Yeah, thanks very much, Piers. And I'm really excited to be part of the conversation today. I like the intro and some of the excitement and the overlap between both e-commerce and cross-border is pretty infectious. I have been in the banking industry for coming up on 14 years. I was one of the co-heads of cross-border payments at Citibank and have just recently moved over into a new role looking after our e-commerce solutions. What we're really trying to do within that space is look at ourselves less like a product vertical organization, like most banks tend to be structured, and really think about ourselves more like a horizontal and really focus on addressing what clients are trying to do and solve their specific problems across all of the product sets that we actually have within our services business within Citi.
So if we dive straight in to the world of e-commerce, maybe let's start with some of the changes that you've seen in recent years. How has this landscape changed in e-commerce, perhaps domestically as well as from a cross-border landscape?
So a couple of things I think I would lay this question up with before we get into sort of what we've actually seen change. The first is if you look at e-commerce as a totality of retail transactions, it's a little over 20% of total transactions. And the second thing is not just the growth that you'd mentioned in cross-border, but the actual growth in the fundamental flows within e-commerce are pretty significant as well. So they're growing around sort of 10, 11% a year, versus traditional retail only growing at around 4%. Now, what that means is if you think about the e-commerce transactions representing a little over 20% of total retail, it's likely that over the next couple of years, around a third of all retail transactions will be e-commerce, which means the importance of e-commerce cannot be ignored. It is going to absolutely be a mission-critical component of what almost every organization out there needs to be thinking about. And as a result, is front and center when a lot of them are engaging with financial institutions such as ourselves. E-commerce also has this incredible democratizing force. If you think about what you mentioned around this sort of global nature of e-commerce, historically, that was really only the purview of global multinationals. They were really the only ones that had the resourcing and the power and the ability to get global. But thanks to e-commerce and the technology that they use, even startups really have this ability to go global and go fast, right? A lot of the reality behind that is that cross-border payments have an extremely critical role in enabling that, because without going cross-border, it's very difficult and actually a little slower to be going in and establishing in every single location. Historically, cross-border payments have been expensive. They've got limited visibility and they tend to be slow. So in terms of what's fundamentally changed, and again, even thinking before you get to payments, in e-commerce, we see a couple of different things. The first is that you tend to see different buying centers engaged than you would in a legacy type of transaction. So you see groups like payments or engineering or product or the core business actually engaging. And these buying centers tend to be a little more innovative. They tend to push the boundary a little bit more. And as a result, the needs that they have tend to be more challenging to solve. They also tend to think less about a payments product like a cross-border payment as a proprietary thing, i.e. I'm paying salaries or I'm paying vendors, etc. They tend to think about a payment more like a tool to enable a product of their own. So if you think about a ride-hailing business, the ability to pay a driver or the ability to collect funds from a consumer is absolutely a core component of how the solution they have is delivered. So it's actually more fundamental in their business than the traditional needs. So cross-border is really an enabling force for their go global and go fast approach. And this has really driven what we've seen. What we've tended to see is a more active and centralized approach to global management of payments, which means you're thinking about trying to access the globe from a single point, being able to make payments in multiple different markets, multiple different currencies, but almost treat them like they're local. We're also seeing quite a lot of heightened consistency in things like data and integration. If you think about some of the activity that's going on right now around the rollouts of ISO 20022 across a number of different markets, that's really driving a huge amount of data and integration. I think the use cases for how the additional information in a payment will be used are just emerging. So we're really at like ground zero when it comes to some of the opportunities that will be there. The second is we've started to see a lot of improvements in FX and price discovery mechanisms. So there's a lot more transparency now on what the end-to-end cost of a transaction will be. And it's almost something that's demanded as part of the payment process. So we see quite a lot of changes in terms of how we reflect what the actual FX price is. And the other ones that I would mention is the power of value-added services. So things like payment enrichment, validation, and validation of payment data are increasingly core parts of how a payment itself is actually done. And then the final thing I would mention is more of a marketplace-oriented thing in cross-border payments, where historically all of the competition was really just traditional banks up against traditional banks. That competitive landscape is now multifaceted. So we're seeing global banks, fintechs, card schemes, and a host of disruptive entrants starting to come into the space as well.
You've brought together so many different concepts, but how would you link this back to some of the shifts in consumer or customer behavior? What are the trends that you see that really come together with technological advancements that are forcing this e-commerce world to have changed in the way that you so eloquently just described it?
It's a great question. Last year at Citi, we ran a survey asking our bank clients what they were seeing and where the battle lines in competition were really being drawn. From a competitive standpoint, you tend to see fintechs and card schemes being quite successful in consumer-originated payments. We were trying to really understand why. Like, why was it that we were seeing this more competitive landscape specifically around cross-border payments? And here's what they told us. First is they did agree with us that actually the competitive landscape was more complex. And a lot of them felt that they had lost market share and that they were going to continue to lose market share. They also agreed with some of the early thoughts that we'd had that actually this was most acute in consumer-originated payments. And what they felt was that it was actually the customer experience that was driving that exact nature. And because of the expectations that we now have, being so used to this one-click checkout world that we have, it's translating into what we see from an experiential standpoint in cross-border payments as well. So the survey came out incredibly strongly, not necessarily in areas you might expect, like make a payment in any form, any method to anyone you want. It was more like the real fundamentals. They wanted payments to be fast. They wanted them to be transparent, and they wanted them to be cost efficient. There was a great article last year that had a quote that I really liked, and it went something along the lines of cross-border payments have gotten faster and more data rich without the use of blockchain. And I thought that was an interesting statement to make because it means that traditional payments are innovating just as much as disruptive technology. It might just not be as visible because of the way in which these groups tend to showcase what they've done. But if we take one example of that and take a look at something like Swift GPI, which has not only driven data transparency and transparency in payments, but it's also actually ended up driving performance. payments have become faster as a result, right? Some of the stats that they released last year was that 50% of GPI payments are now happening in under 30 minutes, 40% in under 5, and 100% in under 24 hours. So things like Swift GPI have been really important in terms of trying to drive technological advancements. And the consumer experience is really what has helped drive some of that. A second area that I would mention is the connectivity around cross-border payments and instant payments. So what you're really seeing here is no longer like a wire being the only method for how you make a cross-border payment. You're now starting to see connectivity between cross-border payment methods and domestic instant payment schemes. All of a sudden, the ability to be able to settle a cross-border payment instantly means that these e-commerce use cases that we were mentioning become enabled even in a cross-border environment. You're not waiting days for a same-day settlement or a settlement to happen fairly quickly to a consumer. So this is an area where you really have an opportunity to flip the entire cross-border narrative on its head. The final piece that I would mention is connectivity to alternative payment methods. It's not just merchants that are accepting APMs, but it's also the service and good providers that are part of the e-commerce landscape that are actually saying, I'd like to potentially get paid and held my value in a wallet rather than in a bank account. So quite an interesting sort of interplay that's coming in here. And what I would mention about e-commerce, which is a little different to the traditional really big business wholesale model, is the beneficiary experience is actually quite an important part of the e-commerce journey. And as a result, being able to connect, if you're thinking about going global quickly, thinking about connecting into APMs, being able to deliver a beneficiary's choice is quite an important thing.
I think that's also been quite an interesting mindset shift in recent years from payer choice, what options do I have at my disposal to pay? But that shift to beneficiary choice, how do I want to be paid? How can I be paid? That for me has been a significant but interesting mindset shift across the e-commerce space and across the financial services ecosystem over the last few years. You've talked about the speed, the cost efficiency, the need for coverage, multiple markets and currencies. And I suppose that's all on the payer choice side of things. What would you say, though, that some of the challenges might be, both from a merchant perspective, as well as from some of the service providers' perspectives? It sounds like to me that there are a lot of potential challenges here for various different entities or layers within the stack.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, if you think about challenges that they're going to face, even if you think about the fact that you're trying to demystify a global world where the reality is every payment method you select in a different market has got actually very little harmonization, right? Like the payment methods, the payment messages themselves tend to be different. It's also an extremely competitive business landscape. Every e-commerce provider is fighting tooth and nail to get users onto their platform because the only way they scale is by having hundreds of thousands, millions of us actually on the platform. So absolutely, the challenges are not lost on us. The other thing I would say as well is technology and messaging standards like ISO 20022 and APIs have done quite a lot to improve this space though as well. So if you're thinking about trying to do things like standardize your integration with an organization, frequently, it makes a huge amount of sense to think about what methods of messaging you're going to be using in that integration journey, because a lot of that will drive the downstream activity and challenges that you're going to face. Tech has done a huge amount to lower the barriers of entry, but there are still a lot of these on-the-ground realities where an asset like a global network is a really important thing.
I think you've just called out a huge pace of change over the past few years in terms of where we're at today, but there's probably more to do. What are some of those trends, those emerging technologies that you see starting to play out over the coming years? And if we bring this back to some of the important relationships within this chain of players from a merchant perspective, how can some of those e-commerce merchants really start to capitalize on those trends, innovations, and changes?
We've spoken quite a lot about the consumer-originated payments, and there's been a huge amount of focus on that, primarily because we've become the one-click checkout generation. But I think there is really a continued trend, which we will see accelerate over the next couple of years, which is going to be the growth of importance of B2B. I think the B2B flow is still the largest flow out there. When you look at like the overall makeup of the cross-border payments world, it's still well north of 85% of all payments. So it is still a very significant component of the overall payment flow. So things like bill presentment, the payments around that, it's not just e-commerce providers that directly connect with consumers that are improving experience, we're also seeing a number of e-commerce platform players that are supporting the B2B space coming around. The second big trend I would say is that e-commerce providers have realized that the scale at which they operate has a pretty significant impact on sort of environments and the users around them. And a lot of them are looking for other methods to keep buyers and sellers engaged for longer, providing things like in-app marketplace wallets, and really trying to drive a true three-sided marketplace experience, not just buyer and seller and marketplace anymore, but also adding financial services into that solution as well. The next one I would mention is regulatory changes. If you think about what a lot of e-commerce marketplaces are doing, is they have a number of licensing-based exemptions. They have business models that allow them to really think about the flow of funds as one component of what they do. But one of the things we're starting to see is that e-commerce models are under increasing review because of the fact that there's a view that there's quite a lot of potential for payments intermediation and therefore potentially licensing as part of that entire process. So watching what happens with PSD3 this year is going to be really important, because it could potentially drive pretty significant changes in the licensing environment around those clients. The final one I would mention, and of course, there's absolutely no trend scoreboard that would be complete without saying the words AI. So I think AI is going to play a really significant role in e-commerce and in cross-border payments as we continue to go. And maybe flipping the board a little bit around those trends I'd mentioned, you know, what should really e-commerce providers be doing about that? How should they be thinking about potentially capitalizing or making sure that they're ready for some of these things? This is really where the rubber hits the road, because there's no point, as an example, if you think about the seller wallets example that we kind of gave for marketplaces, there's no real point in keeping buyers and sellers engaged for no benefit. So of course, this kind of capitalization in the business side of it is quite important. And so I think a lot of these organizations are seeing the inclusion of financial services as a wonderful opportunity to monetize the engagement model. So they're using methods like cross-selling. So you can do things like providing additional services, ad sales, access to discounts. Those types of things are really powerful ways of creating additional opportunity, financing the participants. It's not just about BNPL, but some of these merchants can actually provide financing to sellers as well. And then lastly, monetizing the flow, right? There's a lot of value to be derived from the actual chain of funds flow in that e-commerce space. We've mentioned a little bit about foreign exchange. FX is a great place to do that. Deposits is a great place to do that. There's a lot of that type of opportunity. We've mentioned sort of in the beneficiary space, the opportunity to, for example, offer beneficiary choice. That is increasingly being seen as a differentiator that gets you to being the platform of choice in that flow. So that's quite a big one. The regulatory one is really more about trying to defend your license to operate. So I think you need to make sure you've partnered with the right banks, the right organizations, the right groups that can help you navigate that space, because a significant portion of regulation will have an impact on how you need to run and operate your business model. And therefore, having this advisory type partnership with a financial institution like Citi is a great way to be able to navigate and stay ahead of some of those curves. And then we've mentioned AI. I think AI is still fairly nascent when I think about it in the cross-border space. We're absolutely going to see its use cases develop. And I think it makes complete sense to be thinking about it from the lenses of, you know, many markets have things like documentary support that's required for a cross-border payment. AI can play a great role in that. Anything as well, for example, where you need things like intelligent routing, which may not just be least cost routing, it might be actually picking the best payment method at the best time. You know, AI has great opportunity to play a role in those spaces. So again, very nascent technology-wise, but I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity to streamline payments, again, coming all the way back to the e-commerce clients and customer experience philosophy that they tend to have. I think you're going to see great opportunities for AI to play a very big role there.
Really interesting. I was talking with some partners around AI and generative AI just last week, and we sort of aligned around the fact that 2023 was the year of excitement in generative AI. And in 2024, it is really about this alignment on understanding, thinking about the art of the possible, trying to translate this into tangible use cases and propositions that solve real life problems and aren't just sort of throwing technology at a problem that perhaps doesn't quite exist in the wider ecosystem. And then you touched on PSD3 as well, obviously hugely important in the Eurozone, and I suspect will have many implications in the UK. Do you see other trends emerging on a global perspective where we might see regulatory patterns emerging from PSD3 appearing here?
It's a good question. If you think about the e-commerce space in particular, the one area that light has shone very brightly on at the moment is some of the exemptions that are enabled through PSD2. So for example, they have a commercial agent exemption that exists in the nature of that regulation. PSD3 is really in its current draft looking like it's going to make those commercial agent type exemptions far more difficult to achieve. In the US, if we have to translate the same type of thing, you've got a similar type of exemption called the agent of the payee exemption. There's a little over 20 states that enable that type of thing. There's a lot of gray in the remaining states. I think you might see quite a lot of impact in that type of space. We know, as an example, the OCC has been fairly vocal at a couple of things like the American Bar Association. These are public articles where they have gone out and said that they're a little bit concerned around some of the nature of partnerships that exist in the financial space, specifically as it has to do with payment intermediation and funds flow intermediation. So I think you're probably going to watch regulators watch what is going on with PSD3 and look at that as a fairly leading edge opportunity. The other thing I would say is regulators tend to share quite a lot of good insight. So when you see that type of thing happen, I think you might also see a few of the more progressive regulators try and copy and paste the same sort of way of thinking into their own book of work. And I would also say there's a lot of great enablement type regulation that's starting to come out. I think it's a very interesting space to watch because PSD3 is going to be quite pioneering here, and you're going to see a lot of that kind of copied into other locations as we go. I think you will still continue to see the same thing that we'd mentioned a little earlier, which is a lot of regulatory complexity. You are still going to see a lot of markets that are very gray in the licensing space, and as a result, probably not as likely to adopt this in the near term. But yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit of a mixed bag.
I'm fascinated to hear about some of the specific examples or success stories from what you're doing at Citi. How is Citi adapting some of the services to really cater for this hugely complex and rapidly changing e-commerce landscape?
If you look at our cross-border platforms, WorldLink has been one of the worldwide leaders in having this connectivity into ACH and a large wire network where the bank has been able to make payments in like 75 ACH corridors, 135 wire networks, a little under 140 currencies, and in total, nearly 200 countries. That's been great from how we've built the base of the business and still remains a very important core of what most clients come to us for. But I think we've really seen the future here as we really want to break down borders and really be able to make payments as if there are no borders, there are no currencies, and there are no restrictions, right? That is really the grandiose vision for that platform. And as a result, what you've seen as us enable our services through API. We know that that's really critical for in-app experiences and driving some of these e-commerce use cases. We also know that cross-border instant payments is really important. Today, we're connected to a number of schemes that give us access to a little over 40 countries. So a really, really sizable footprint that's been built out there. The next is also connectivity to alternative payment networks. We've been building pay to card, payments into wallets, a number of those different features that add to our payment ubiquity. And then we've also been adding value-added services, like a lot of the documentary supported required countries. We've been digitizing documentation flow processes. We've been adding things like global beneficiary services, which allow beneficiaries to fully track and trace a payment down to the end. And then finally, validation and enrichment services. One of the most common queries from clients is either the beneficiary claiming non-receipt or our clients asking us where the payment is. One example of a success story I'd love to share is we've just recently rolled out the ability to do full-blown validation of a payment into Vietnam. This is a market where the beneficiary's name and address information is really important in the completion of the payment. And if you make any mistakes in that, the payment is rejected. So this is a corridor where we have historically seen a huge amount of those queries. Not only is that difficult to service, but it's also quite hard for the clients to create a good experience in that space. So we've seen a number of e-commerce providers who actually found a huge amount of benefit in doing this because one of the upsides is they can now provide that validation upfront and they know before the payment leaves whether it's likely to succeed or not. So that's been a great example of how we can drive a great customer experience upfront by just doing something simple like validation. We have a big sort of opportunity to continue to roll that out. And we think that we're just going to continue to see that going from strength to strength. The second area I'd call out is we we've been extremely successful at Citi in enabling both banks and payments intermediaries. You know, we took a decision many years ago not to see payments intermediaries as competition, but to see them as partners. And as a result, our settlement network is a really sizable enablement tool for a lot of these payments intermediaries and banks today. The last one I would mention is, you know, we've mentioned this rapid global expansion for e-commerce. And I think where we're really uniquely positioned is we can not only help e-commerce clients go through this go global, go fast mantra that I was mentioning. And that's primarily because of our global cross-border payment capabilities. But we're also able to help them go through the full journey. So as we see them mature and they need to go and become local businesses in those markets, we also have that wonderful 95-country network. We're able to catch them on the way in and then help them actually localize as their business scales and becomes more important in a specific market. So you really tend to think about our ability to serve these clients, not just from that cross-border perspective, but also the ability to be there with them throughout the journey.
A lot of change happening. It's really, really great to hear. And I would say that you have perfectly encapsulated the breadth, the complexity of this space. Just, you know, how many different challenges and requirements and needs there are to fulfill on a global basis. So a massive, massive thank you, Will. If anyone is looking for any more information, where could they find some more about you online?
I'm always quite active on LinkedIn. So if you were looking for a direct connect, I'm fully available on LinkedIn. We also have a huge amount of information available on our citigroup.com website, which includes a huge amount of information about the services business in general, as well as how to get in contact with potentially your coverage person or sales folk within Citi, who will be able to bring you into the organization. And some of the solution sets that we have today help you navigate a little bit of who we are.
Fantastic. Well, Will, a massive thank you for joining me today. It's been an absolutely brilliant episode, in my opinion, and I'm sure that all of our listeners will agree. And to all of our listeners, thank you for choosing to tune in to another episode of the Payments Innovation Podcast.
Thanks for joining us here on Payments Innovation. We'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas about the show. Connect with Currency Cloud on Twitter or LinkedIn to find out more. And remember to subscribe via your favorite podcast player. Until next time.